Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, my hometown up there on the edge of the prairie. It's been raining a lot and misty in the mornings, early in the morning. It's been warm, though, and beautiful weather forecast for Easter Sunday, sunny and warm. And they'll all be coming out to church on Easter morning. It used to be back when I was young, before you were born, that little girls would come out for Easter Sunday all dressed in bright new Easter coats and bonnets and white gloves. But those days are past, unless there is a grandmother with a lot of influence. A lot of girls come out dressed in very nice jeans and a nice blouse. Lake Wobegon Lutheran Church and Our Lady of Perpetual Responsibility are filled with flowers for tomorrow, lilies, and also chrysanthemums and all sorts of flowers, representing, depending on your theology, the resurrection of Jesus Christ, or the beginning of new life in the cycle of being that expresses the spirit of love in the universe. A lot of Lutherans really are Unitarians, you know. I mean, it's just is the case. A lot of them are. They don't say anything about it, but there are. Same as a lot of people who go to basketball games in a small town don't care about basketball. They just go to be sociable. Think about that. It was a herd of deer wandering around town all this week, about 10, 12 of them. It's been a mild winter, and the deer were unafraid, munching on various salads in people's backyards. Clint Bunsen saw them when he got up early Tuesday morning to go down to the Chatterbox Cafe for breakfast, knowing that with Easter coming, people would be sure to remind him of the story of the big bunny. Things happen to you in a little town. You do things and you hope to forget about them, but years go by and people never forget. And Easter comes and they remember that night, though it was 20-some years ago, when to entertain your small children, you put on a big bunny suit with a big bunny head. And after supper, you went hop, hop, hopping around the backyard, setting eggs out under the bushes, and the children's mother got them ready for bed, and then she said, "What is that out in the backyard hopping around?" And Daddy hopped up to the window and put his face up against the window and saw his children, their mouths wide open, screaming so loud you could hear it through the glass, terrifying them. And then you could remember the scene when you decided you needed to level with them, and so you walked into their bedroom a little bit later carrying the dead bunny suit and the terrible head under your arm, and they screamed, and they wouldn't stop screaming. They screamed until after midnight. Your children looked at you strangely for weeks after that. You'd sit in the living room reading your newspaper and look up, and there was a child looking in through the doorway at you, like a guard in a mental hospital, looking at a patient with a reputation for violence. He went down to the Chatterbox Cafe and he sat down at the counter, and Darlene poured him some coffee, and Dorothy came out and said the caramel rolls were really good and she'd been saving him one this morning, and he just waited for it. And Leroy came in and sat down and asked him how he was. He was fine, 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 fine. And then Florian Krebsbach came in and sat down on the stool on the other side of Leroy, the constable, and Florian said, "What are you up to these days?" And Leroy said, "Well, I've been driving around making sure the big bunny doesn't come back." Years later, It's a scene that a father carries around in his mind like a whip, and he can use it whenever he likes to whip himself. But you wish other people would just let go of it. But they bring it up, and you smile. You smile, and you chuckle, knowing that this will not ever go away until these people die. Not that you would want to see them dead, of course. But if they did die, there would be an upside to it. Wouldn't be all weeping and rending of garments. No. There was a bright moon out a couple of nights this week, so bright it woke people up in the middle of the night. Cindy Headland woke up a little bit after midnight, and Roger was next to her. He was snoring really loud, really loud. He sounded like an animal. He didn't sound like anybody she knew, really. Sounded like a badger, an old badger who was caught in a leg trap or was hanging over some barbed wire. Terrible sounds. She went downstairs to the kitchen. She knew she couldn't fall back to sleep easily. She turned on the radio. There was the usual garbage late at night, all these talk shows, people yammering at each other about space aliens and about sports and politics, all these people that you've gone out of your way to avoid all your life, and now here they are, they're all over your radio. But she found this station that came from northern Minnesota, and it played jazz, wonderful jazz, just a very nice little jazz ensemble. And she sat and listened to it, and she booted up her computer and she went online. She loves jazz. Jazz has always been part of a beautiful fantasy of hers, in which she is sitting at a table with a white tablecloth in a restaurant in New York City. And it's on the top floor of a tall building in Midtown, and the table is right next to a window that looks to the south, and the Empire State Building is right out there, and all of the lights of the city twinkling, and the lights on the cables of the Verrazano Bridge, and lights on the bridges and the decks of the ships in the harbor, and lights of planes coming in on the approach to LaGuardia, and way out to sea a green light flashing just off Sandy Hook. And she's there in the restaurant. She's wearing a black dress and red, bright red fingernails. And she reaches into a pack of cigarettes and she puts a cigarette to her lips, and these slender, tan, handsome hands with pale, brown, delicate hair on the backs of them take her hand and light the cigarette. And she draws in the smoke, and through the cloud of smoke she sees this handsome man sitting across the table from her. And there is a little jazz band that's playing, and a few couples are up and dancing. It's a lovely fantasy. It has a number of variables. If she's getting along with Roger at the time, the man across the table is a gay man, and he's one of those wonderful gay men who love to be with women and whom you can love without feeling unfaithful. If she's not getting along so well with Roger, the man across the table is an old high school classmate who is doing very well for himself and who told her once to look him up if she ever comes to New York, and so she is looking him up. And if she's really not getting along with Roger, then she is a widow, and the man across the table is a very charming young man who is helping her work through her grief. Listening to the jazz, she went online and she did a search for an old classmate who she came across online. If the truth be told, she looked him up a couple of weeks ago. He was the first boy she loved, the boy who was so important to her when she was 18. One summer, they spent almost every day together. They went swimming at the granite quarry, and they sat in the front seat of his car, and they talked until 2 and 3 in the morning, and they necked and they kissed. And they promised that they would never, ever part or forget about each other, but he went off to college, and they did part, and the letters got shorter and shorter and farther apart. But she's never, ever forgotten this boy. And when she went online for the first time, she discovered how easy it is to look up people anywhere in America. She looked him up and she found that he was a Lutheran minister in a small town in Nebraska. And they corresponded back and forth, email, and she discovered that he was not happy at all, that he'd been unhappy for a long time, and that he still thought about her a lot. He was very unhappy. Wrong line of work, wrong place to live, wrong wife, didn't understand him. Kids were like strangers to him. And he wondered if they might get together sometime. She went online the other night, and suddenly there was an instant message from him on the screen right there. He was online at the same time. And Lonesome Lutheran said, "Hi. Hi, how are you? How are you?" She was brought up to answer this question in 4 words and to say, "Fine, how are you?" But she didn't. Something about that big blank screen inspired her to tell him everything, how she was. And then he told her. He was thinking of ending his marriage soon. He didn't know what he was going to do, but he wasn't going to stay in Nebraska. He couldn't be a minister any longer. He was either going to go out to Seattle and get a job waiting on table and write his memoirs, or he was going to go over to India to an ashram run by a former Lutheran, the Rama Lama Rasmussen. Or he was going to go to New York City and study acting and try his luck. He sent her an instant message and said, "It would be wonderful to meet you in New York City. I'd pay your airfare if you'd come. Would you?" Well, she might, she thought. She didn't know what to say. He said, "Do you still like jazz?" "Oh, yes. Oh, yes." And she could imagine dancing with him at the club of her fantasy, the restaurant high in the air and the lights all around, dancing with this man to the band that was playing on the radio right now, dancing to music that can make you feel young again. You don't feel 50 years old listening to jazz. It's not about being 50. It's not about yard work. It's not about livestock. It's not about work. It's not about raising children. It's about being young and being free and being a romantic. She listened, and the badger was restless upstairs. The badger was really flopping around. The badger was really caught in his trap. They talked until early morning, and he asked her again if she'd come to New York to meet him. And she said, "I don't know. Let me think about it." Though she thought to herself, "I am falling in love with this man." It was so delicious talking to him. It was so delicious. Who can you talk to if you live in a small town except your husband? And if your husband is part of your problem, who do you talk to then? And then suddenly, her friend had to leave. The message came, bye, have to go. And he was gone. She didn't go online the next day. She didn't check for email. But the morning after that, she called up Pastor Inkvist, and she asked if she could come in and see him that morning, though it was early. She went in to see him in his office. Her confessor. He didn't used to be a good confessor early in his career. A confessor is simply somebody who listens to you, and maybe that's all they ever do. It is a great comfort to any grown person to have someone to whom you can tell every crazy thing you've been thinking and every crazy thing you've been doing that makes you so miserable, and just have them listen to you. She told him everything, sitting in his office, and he asked her a couple of questions, and then he was quiet. And in that moment of quiet, she knew that she was not going to go to New York, indeed. And she was not going to take another step toward that restaurant high in the sky and that jazz ensemble playing. She knew that she wasn't. She didn't need anybody to tell her. And then he gave her his little talk about wholeheartedness, suitable for Lutheran, Unitarian, Hindu, Buddhist, or Jew. To have a whole heart, to live life with a whole heart, not divided against yourself, but to have a whole heart and to be entirely loving what you love and without question. To have a whole heart is to have a cheerful heart. He said a little prayer for the both of them, for patience and courage and a little bit of wisdom. And then she left. He walked out the door. It was still early. There was still mist in the air. And that herd of 10 or 12 deer were standing in the church parking lot, munching on tulips. He looked at them. It was like a tour group. It was like a group of young women who had come to town to see the sights. And they all looked up when he came out. They all looked up, their heads in the air, listening. He'd never had a congregation so attentive as this one. And he said what he'd meant to tell Cindy when she came in to see him. He said, whatsoever ye find to do, do it heartily, as unto the Lord and not unto men. And he wished them a happy Easter. And then he clapped his hand, and as one, with a whole heart, all together, they turned, they wheeled, they leaped up over the tulips, and they trotted off down the street. Happy Easter to you all. And that's the news from Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.